Educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on incorrigible delinquency when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft. He was a journalist. And someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Now, Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it, and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly, he said, for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with. And others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes, and we're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings, and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program and the New World Order. They're the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and the Carnegies and Vanderbilts. Let's wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham. And let's stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and to survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000 Bible prophecy and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about child discipline, incorrigible delinquency. Where does that come from? Who's fostering that anyway? I mentioned to you last time, you know, 50, 75 years ago, we didn't have that in this country. And I pointed out to you last time, I said, you know, they don't have that in Saudi Arabia or Japan either. They don't allow it. Here in America, we've been smitten by Dr. Smock, Dr. Spock, Dr. Seuss. You know, these people have it in their minds, and maybe sincerely so, I don't know, I doubt it, but it may be, that if you spank a child, you're going to do something to that child mentally that will be a scar on his life forever. I mean, he'll never recover from this beating, from this child abuse. In fact, spanking a child is called child abuse in many locations, and in many people's mind, if you spank your child or correct him, that you're doing something terrible. I don't know where they learn all this, but evidently that's something you get from public school or college or social lady or somebody. In fact, the state gets into the act now, see, and they have an enforcer out here called social lady. And if your child goes to school and has a bruise on him, and they just say, you know, the teacher says, where'd you get that bruise? Well, I got spanked last night. My daddy spanked me. See, the teacher would say, oh, that's a spanking. That's equated to a beating. Spanking and beating. See, in the same way that we associate discrimination with racism. See, discrimination, racism, look it up in the dictionary. Discrimination doesn't have anything to do with racism. But we think it does. And that's our educational system at work. It's our educational system and your tax dollars at work. Now, God has a little something to say about child rearing. Believe it or not, in the Bible, you know, the Creator, He created people. And when people are born, they're pretty tiny. They weigh about 8 pounds and they're about 2 feet long and they don't know very much. And everything that a child learns, you know, he's going to learn it in his first 4 or 5 years. You know, the child as he's growing up. Then when he gets to be five, he, from about 5 to 10, he goes into another stage of learning. See? And then when he gets to be about 10 years old, then he gets 10 to 15, he gets into another stage of learning. And then about 15 to 20, comes into another stage. And by the time he's 21, we call him an adult. And this kid, when he turns into an adult at age 20 or 21, isn't going to know any more than has entered his brain by his five senses. He has to experience. So somebody had to explain to him. Somebody had to tell him so that he would know. And that's what we call education. Education. And in the Bible, there's a number of statutes, four to be exact, four education statutes. And I have those written out, and I've code-pled them out, and I looked at them, and I saw, is there anything in here in the Bible about college education? And not a word. Not a word. How about a high school education? Not a word. Not a word. How about sending them to first grade in grammar school? Not a word. Now, education is something that goes back thousands of years. And in fact, here in the United States, we codified it at the federal level in 1937. Many states had already codified it, and they called it compulsory education laws. Listen, boys and girls, long before California, Washington, Oregon, or New York came up with a compulsory education law, the creator of the universe had already done that. Yeah, that's right. Way back in the days of Moses, about 3,200 years ago, God came up with a compulsory education law. So in Anglo-Saxon administration, the duty that every parent has to educate his child has already been set in the Ten Commandments. That's right. Now, it's true there isn't a commandment that says, thou shalt educate your child, but the Ten Commandments is the basic law of the land, just like the Constitution is the basic law of the land. And there's no place in the Constitution that says, thou shalt educate thy child in public school either. But that doesn't mean that the compulsory education law in your state or at the national level isn't binding upon you and me and everybody else. Now, I'm not here on a crusade to get you to vote for this guy or to vote for that guy, but, you know, as an educator myself, and I'm kind of into school, you know, I educate people. They come to school here and they listen to what I have to say. That's called an educator. And I tell these people information that they probably didn't know before. And that's my business, to tell you something you didn't know before. I don't have any duty to persuade you that I'm right and you're wrong. That's not my role in life. I don't care what you believe. My role in life is to present facts. And that's what I do. I present facts. And so in our society here in the United States, for all you people living around the world, we have totally divorced morality and religion from our educational system. It's called separation of church and state. We don't want that here. And as a result of that, we have a crime wave here, a juvenile crime wave that you people in Japan and Korea and Taiwan and China and Bolivia, you don't have that. In fact, you'd be amazed here in the United States if you could see the juvenile delinquents. I mean, people, juveniles, they belong to gangs here, say, and they tattoo themselves, and they wear earrings, and they smoke dope, and they use drugs, and they kill people. I mean, just driving down the street, and they shoot people right off the street corners. You believe that? I mean, is it because they hate them? They don't even know them. It's part of their initiation. You know, to kill somebody. So they just drive down the street and kill somebody. And it's a great problem here. And people lock themselves in their houses. I mean, they've got bars over their houses and locks and chains, and they lock themselves in. They don't go out at night, especially in our big cities. And there are certain areas of our big cities that certain groups of people would not dare walk into at high noon on a bright sunny day. Wouldn't think of driving through or walking through there. Now, you don't find that in many places in the world, in fact, most places, but you do in the Anglo-Saxon Western world that some of the rest of the people in the world call degenerate, especially the Muslims in the Middle East, and they're not too far removed from the truth. So last time I pointed out to you, and I'll do it again, there are some statutes here in the Bible that talk about discipline, talk about spanking children, talk about, you know, to spare the rod is to spoil the child. Now, you've probably heard that, to spare the rod is to spoil the child, and then there isn't a social lady in the country that would subscribe to that maxim. Now, it doesn't appear in the Bible. Those words do not appear in the Bible. But that principle certainly does. Now, listen to this. God starts off, he's got 15 statutes here in the Bible that deal with children and how you as a parent ought to deal with that child. And he says, if you'll follow these 15 principles right here, that kid will probably grow up from birth to age 21 without killing somebody, without joining a gang, without using dope and drugs, and probably turn out to be a fair to middle and good human being. Now, they're not always that way, and that's because human beings, of and by themselves, are carnal. I got that from Romans 8, verse 7, carnal. That just means natural, normal, everyday, garden variety people. They hate God, and a social lady hates God. I've never met a social lady that loved God and kept his commandments. There might be one out there, but I kind of doubt it. And that's because if a social lady loved God and kept his commandments, she wouldn't be a social lady, because it's like a virgin whore. You can have a virgin, and you can have a whore, but you can't have a virgin whore. And you can have a social lady, or you can have a lady that obeys God and keeps his commandments, but you can't have a social lady that obeys God and keeps his commandments, because the law of the state is at diametric loggerheads, at the exact opposite from the law of God. Let me give you an illustration. In Proverbs 3, verse 5, it says, trust in the eternal with all your heart, and lean not to your own understanding. Lean not to your own understanding. There's a way that seems right to a man, but that way ends in death. That's Proverbs 14, 12. There's a way, just following logic, that seems right to a man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death. So you put those two together, and that tells you a little part of the story. And in Proverbs 3, verses 11 through 13, there's a little story that goes in here. And he says, my son, despise not the chastening of the Eternal, and neither be weary of his correction. For whom the Eternal loveth, he correcteth, even as a father the son in whom he delights. And happy is the man that finds wisdom and the man that gets understanding. Now, wisdom and understanding comes from instruction. You know, most of us would not know that theft is wrong unless somebody had instructed us. So when I was a child, somebody told me, I don't know when, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, stealing is bad. Now, you know, when a kid sees something, a toy, sees another kid over here with a toy, he wants it, so he goes over and takes it. And then the other kid cries, and they get into a tussle, and then mommy comes over and tells one kid to share his toy and the other kid not to take it. And the kid that took it stole it, and the kid that's crying, he said, you ought to share your toy over here. Because when children cry, it's grating on us. Adults do not like to listen to children cry. Or kick and scream and throw themselves on the floor and act up and act like children. We don't like that. And so we try to pacify and placate them in any way possible, just to get them to shut up. And what that teaches children is that they're the boss, and the parents over here, these adults over here, are objects to be played with and played against one another so that I can get my way. And you're sitting there saying, yeah, but a two-year-old can't do that. Oh, yeah, they can. They can and they do. I watch it every day. Now, you don't give your child credit for as smart as he is. Your child is smarter than your dog, and your dog can be trained better than your child. And if you'll take a look, most people's dogs behave and act better than their children do. Just take a look around sometime. Pay attention to that. Now, in Proverbs 10, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. And he is in the way of life that keepeth instruction, but he that refuseth reproof erreth. And, you know, as children grow up, sometimes they get to the point where they refuse instruction. And two-year-olds, they're called the terrible twos, will refuse instruction. And this child, as he grows up, will constantly refuse your instruction. I know I did that when I was a child growing up from each stage, you know, about 0 to 5, and 5 to 10, 10 to 15, 15 to 20. And as you're going through these various stages of life, and, you know, you're learning different things as time goes on. You know, I wasn't learning calculus when I was 5. And I wasn't learning how to shoot a gun, you know, when I was 3 and a half. But by the time I got to be 10, 11, 12, as that stage of life came along, my dad said, okay, now it's time for you to learn how to use a gun. I wasn't driving cars yet. So then when I got to be about 14, 15, 16, my dad said, well, it's time for you to start learning how to drive. And I remember when I was 14, 15 years old, my dad took me out on an old country back road, and he's driving down the road and instructing me. He'd say, see that rock in the road over there? Now watch, I'm going to steer around that rock, because if you hit that rock, you're going to bust a tire. See? And then he showed me, he said, now there's a box in the road over there. We're going to drive around that box. We don't know what's in that box. We don't want to drive over it. It might be full of nails. And see, at various stages of life, I'm learning things and I'm getting instruction, but I rejected it. And that's because of vanity. See, human beings are motivated by these five motivators, vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Five motivators. And I rejected that. I said, what does this old man know anyway? See, my dad, you know, when I was 15 years old, hell, he was 35. You know, he was an old fogey. He couldn't possibly know anything. And young people look at old people and say, those people are really dumb. That's stupid, and it doesn't make any sense, and you know better than that, but that's what we think, you know, as we're going through these various stages. And so here in Proverbs, God is instructing us and telling us the same thing. You know, you people think that when you're 35, 40, 50, 60 years old, you know you're pretty damn smart, don't you? Well, how does that stack up against some guy that's 35 million years old? This God here in the Bible says, I'm without beginning and without end. I don't know how old this guy is, but that's pretty old. When you don't have a beginning and you don't have an end, that is old. Real old. You know, that's where a million years doesn't count. Now, surely, over the past 35 million years, this God has been around longer than the earth, longer than human beings. Surely, he must have learned something that you don't know yet. You ever thought about that? This guy might know something that you don't know. So, you know, here we are as human beings. Now, I'm an old man. Now, I'm pushing 70. But, you know, in my lifetime, I learned some things. And, in fact, I'm learning every day. There isn't a day that goes by that this old man doesn't learn something from somebody that he didn't know before. I make it a point to do that. That's why all these reports flow across my desk every day, and I'm getting stuff off the internet, and I'm getting stuff out of books, and getting stuff from other people, and so on. And I'm amazed at how much I'm learning here, even at my advanced old age. I'm saying, oh, wow, I didn't know that before. Now, you know, I was 35 years old. When I was 35, I thought I knew it all. By the time I was 45, I knew it all. By the time I was 55, I said, there surely can't be anything else out there that I don't know about. And my golly, every single day goes by, I learn something new. So I'm just going to pass that on to you. I don't care what your age is or where you're at, where you live, who you are, or what your educational level is. You're going to be learning stuff from now on till you die. And if you're paying attention over here, it should dawn on you that you don't know everything. I was always struck by Kent Hovind. One day he was talking to some guy, and he's relating the story. And this guy came up to him, and Kent Hovind's a creationist, and this guy was an evolutionist. And he came up to Hovind, and he chastised him for his creationist views. And Hovind listened to him patiently, and when he got through, he said, sir, do you know everything that there is to know in the whole wide world? He asked that of this evolutionist. He said, do you know everything that there is to know? Now, if the guy said, yes, I do, I know everything there is to know, you know he's a fool, don't you? So the guy wasn't a fool, and he said, well, no, I don't know everything that there is to know in the whole wide world. And so Hovind said, let me ask you this. Do you know half of everything that there is to know in the whole wide world? Now, if this guy says, yes, I know 50% of everything that there is to know in the whole wide world, we'd know that he was a lying fool, wouldn't we? I mean, anybody that's got a brain or half a brain could figure that out. So the guy was not dumb. He was not a fool, and he wasn't even half a fool. And he said, well, no, I don't know one half of everything that there is to know in the whole wide world. And Hovind then asked the closing question. He said, sir, could it be that what I have just told you is a part of that one half of everything that there is to know that you have not heard yet? Now, boys and girls, there's a lot of wisdom right there. And the Bible talks a lot about wisdom. And I listened to people and I said, now see, I learned something from this Baptist preacher that I didn't know before. Very simple, elementary logic. There's probably a lot out there I didn't know. Now, let me share with you some things that maybe you didn't know. Things that you think you know, but maybe what you thought you knew you didn't know, and maybe it isn't true, or what you think you know may be false. Now, there's another neat scripture here in the Bible. It's in Revelation 12, verse 9. And God said, the whole world has been deceived. I looked at that years ago, and I said, no, it can't be true. No, because I heard Abraham Lincoln. He said, you can fool all of the people some of the time, and you can fool some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time. And I was raised with that proverb, and I knew that proverb, and I said, you cannot fool all of the people all of the time. See, that's not true. You can fool all of the people all of the time. And in the Bible, the creator of the universe says that's true. And I looked at that and said, well, if that's true, then I've been deceived. Here's where some revelation comes in. And, you know, your vanity sits there and says, well, look, I know that guy Gordon could be deceived. This is you. So you're sitting there listening right now. You're saying, hey, that guy Gordon, he could be deceived, but not me. I'm me. See, I'm too smart for that. I'm doing the same thing. I'm sitting over here saying, well, listen, that guy listening to the radio over there, he could be deceived. He's dumb. But not George Gordon. He's too smart for that. You can't deceive me. Now, think back over a little time here. Have you ever been fooled by somebody? Did you ever make a mistake in life? Did somebody ever come up to you, lie to you, you believed it? You know, maybe George Bush, you know? You people voted him in. I don't know how. If you ask somebody today, did you vote for George Bush? They'd all deny it. And I ask, well, if none of you people voted for George Bush, how did he become president? Well, you voted for George Bush, and then you came to a conclusion, well, I made a mistake. He fooled me. See, he said he was going to do one thing, did something else. And so I've been fooled. Well, if it wasn't George Bush, it was something else. And so one day you woke up and you said, hey, this isn't right. Well, that's a fool. See, I was in class yesterday and I said, how many fools are there here in the classroom? And everybody looked at me. Nobody raised his hand. Not a single one. I said, how many fools do we have in class today? Everybody's looking at me with a blank stare. So I raised my hand and I said, I am a fool. God, that's quite an admission. Now go look that up in the dictionary. See, a fool is somebody who has been fooled. And looking back over my 70 years, I have been fooled in the past. Fooled. That means I have been tricked. I've been deceived. Somebody pulled a fast one on me. And I was fooled. I was a fool. How often does that happen? Quite often. Quite often people lie to me and I believe them. Well, sometimes people lie to me. And based upon my experience, I can, well, wait a minute. The last time somebody told me that story, it was a lie. So I'm suspicious. See? But sometimes I haven't heard that story before, and I believe this guy. See? And he fools me. That's what con men do. You know, like your Treasury Secretary, and like your Federal Reserve Chairman, and like your President, they lie to you, and then you believe it. And then you act upon it, and then you find out later that you've been fooled because they lied to you. Well, then you were a fool. Now, I've been a fool in the past, and I'm a fool now, and I will probably be a fool once or twice more before I die. Now, most people don't want to make that kind of an admission, but it's true. I mean, it's just that's the way it is. I didn't make it that way, and I'm sorry as hell that it is that way. So I work real hard to be wise and to avoid being a fool. I'm going to work real hard to see if I can't keep you from fooling me. Now, out here in the world, they're telling us that we ought not to spank our children, that discipline is bad for children, that you're going to scar this child for life if you thwart his ambitions or his desires. So this kid's 2 years old, and over in the supermarket. Or he's 4 years old, or he's 6 years old, you know. This kid wants Fruit Loops. And so he's walking along with his mom, and he's whining, and he's crying, and his mother is wiping his nose, and, oh, won't you please be quiet, little Johnny? Oh, won't you please? Oh, won't you please? And this little kid over here is in total control. And he's got this big adult over here just cringing at what this kid's going to do next. And the kid knows that. Hell, the kid's smarter than the adult. The kid's got the adult totally fooled. And maybe you'll see this kid throw a fit, you know, and he'll cry and yell and scream. Because he wants chocolate cocoa puff puff Fruit Loops or something like that, you know, the breakfast cereal. And so mama gets it for him and gives it to him. Well, now what's that teach the child? It teaches the child that when he wants something, he has a desire. And he says, mommy, mommy, Fruit Loops, Fruit Loops. And mommy says, no Fruit Loops. He's been thwarted now, see. And he says, aha, I know what to do when I'm thwarted. I will whine and cry. And so he whines and cries, and mommy tries to pacify him and says, oh no, little Johnny, please don't cry. That's not nice, and please, you know. And so the kid says, Fruit Loops, and mommy won't budge, see. Now the kid screams and yells. And mommy, now, no, don't stop that yelling right now. Or I'm going, and she threatens him. See, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. See, I'm going to take you out and spank you. And so is mommy going to take him out of the store and spank him? Hell no. And he knows that. Hell, he's been through this trick before. He knows how to jerk mommy's strings. And so now he throws himself on the floor. He kicks, he screams, he yells. And mommy now is scared of my God, look at all these people looking. And so she picks up the Fruit Loops and puts them in the shopping cart. Now the kid's won. That kid showed that mother a thing or two about child discipline. Now, all of us have that experience in our lifetimes. You know, at some point in time, you have that. What do you do with a kid that acts like that, behaves like that, and jerks your strings and controls you? See, most of these young people out there, they've been to college. And these social ladies over there, hell, they can't control their kids. They can't control anybody else's kids. They'll take your kid away from you and put them in foster care. The foster care people let them grow like weeds because they get paid for it. There's a lot of money. See, this social work and all of this child thing in public school, it's worth billions of dollars, maybe trillions, but certainly hundreds of billions. And social ladies' career, social ladies' income, social ladies' status in society is based upon her education, her beliefs, and that is no child discipline. We're not going to discipline these children. So here in the Western world, we have a whole society of Mr. Rogers, Big Bird, Barney children who have grown up without any direction, without discipline. And so when this kid gets to be big, 15, 18 years old, you know, he gets to be big physically, and now he gets out of control. And now, you know, when he wanted Fruit Loops, he threw a fit. And now he wants a car. Now he wants dope. Now he wants money. And he doesn't know how to work. He's never worked a day in his life. And that's because the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto prevents work. Children can't work. It's against the law for children to work. By the time this kid gets to be 18 years old, he's never worked a day in his life. And now you're telling him he needs to go to college so that he can get a job and go to work. This kid doesn't want to go to work. He's had everything given to him all of his life, and all he has to do is throw a fit to get it. And when you don't give me what I want, I throw this fit. You know, a kid that gets to be 18 years old throwing a fit, you know, gets dangerous. So he picks up a gun, he starts shooting people off the street corners. He gets in a car, and the cop wants to stop him. You know, this kid's driving this car, maybe he's a little erratic or something like that. And so the policeman, he's going to stop this kid, you know, from driving this car. Cars are big, you know. Cars, you know, they're big, dangerous thingies over here. And if you don't handle this thing correctly, you can hurt people with it. And so, you know, the kid, he says, well, I ain't stopping for this. Guy steps on the gas, and here you got this high-speed chase. You go 100 miles an hour. I mentioned this to you the other day. This kid's out of control. And so the policeman has to bring this guy under control. And he's big. You know, he weighs 190 or 220 pounds, and he's big. He's out of control. His mental processes have never been taught and trained to control his body. He just has these desires, and when these desires are thwarted, you know, he throws a fit. You know, when he's 2 years old, you can pick him up, and you can, you know, hang on to him. The kid gets to be 18 years old, and you grab a hold of him to hang on to him, you know, and he gets excited. All right. So here in the Bible, the God, the Creator, now, knowing that, I mean, he's been around for 35 million years or 70 million, I don't know how long, it's been a long time, and he designed and created these human beings. He says, hey, I'm going to design this human being, and here's the way this machine's going to work. And so he said, when you got this kid, he's 2 years old, he said, now's the time to train him up in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he won't depart from. So you start young, and you start training him, and the place to start training him is with pain. Pain. That's the vehicle that we use for training. Because this kid at 18, you know, when he has the tire shot out in the back of the car and his car rolls over 3 times, he's going to suffer some pain. A car traveling at 110 miles an hour that rolls over 4 times creates pain, agony, and suffering for the occupants inside. Sometimes even death. Now, don't you think that it would be better if we applied a little bit of pain on this kid's ass when he's 2 years old and teach him to control his body before he gets to be 18 and he gets so far out of control that we have to shoot the tires out of his car as he's driving 110 down some back street in Chicago? I know it's a wild new idea. Hang on. We'll talk more about it when we come back. Let's see if we go anyplace. Oh, here it is right here. I got to remind you people that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily worldwide over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the law. Our website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can all be accessed to the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these law or programs are archived on the internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the law is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct. To the best of our knowledge and belief in the law, or an editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors and publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because the authors and publications that we cite here on the law may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the law or an editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about child discipline here. Mainly, this biblical statute that talks about incorrigible delinquency, and what do you do about it? So I reported to you that in the Bible, and there's two laws here, two basic laws in Scripture. If you curse your parents, that carries the death penalty. And if you smite your parents, it carries the death penalty. Two statutes here. And that comes from the fifth commandment that says, honor your father and mother, that it may be well with you and you have a long life on earth. And it's one of the Ten Commandments. And under the Ten Commandments, there are these various statutes, 759 of them, to be exact, or I think pretty close to exact. I tell people, you know, I was looking through the Scripture, I wrote them all down, I found 759. Once in a while, I get a letter, and it comes in and says, oh, you're wrong, Mr. Gordon, there's 613 laws in the Bible. They got that from some Jewish rabbi. Some Jewish rabbi went through the Bible, he counted up 613 laws, and they published that. I went through the Bible, I found 759. So, you know, I found a few more. So it dawned on me that if a rabbi could miss, you know, 100 laws or so, 150, that maybe I might have missed 4 or 5. And so there could be more than 759, but I found at least 759, and some of them deal with child rearing, child discipline. And I thought I'd share those with you. Yeah, it carries the death penalty. Now, here in the Western world, you know, if you were to suggest that you took these juvenile delinquents, let's take a kid, for instance, he's driving down the street and he shoots somebody off the street corner. We take the kid out, and we tie him up to a pole, and we stone him to death. We kill him. And then we make an announcement to all the children, you know, in school. And we say, now, we want all of you children out of school because we're going to have a big party at 2 o'clock on Friday afternoon. So we're going to let school out early, and we're all going to go down to Times Square, and we're all going to pick up a rock, and we're going to throw it at this guy, and we're going to kill him. Do you think that that would cause an impression on your child? Now, there was a guy that I had here in the school that witnessed two of these types of punishments in Saudi Arabia. He worked for Aramco. And there was a princess over there, and this princess had an affair, and I don't think she was married, and I'm not sure if this guy was married. I don't remember that. If so, it was adultery, but if not, it was fornication, and if not, it was interracial. And so it was a little liaison, and, you know, in the Muslims, they don't like this. You see, Muslims, they've got some morals. They're not like Americans. We act like alley cats over here, but these people actually have some morals. They think that's wrong. Now, as a matter of fact, we used to think that was wrong here in the United States also. There was a time in America, for all you people around the world, now that we Americans over here, we didn't live like alley cats, and we didn't practice fornication, and we didn't practice sodomy, bestiality, and adultery. We do now, no doubt about it, and we export it. We wallow in it. We love it. So part and parcel with American way of life. Sexual perversion is part and parcel of our way of life. Now, this lady over here, this princess, got caught, and they took her out, buried her in the sand, so that just her head was sticking out of the sand. She's totally immobilized. Could have done the same thing, I guess, by tying her up to a telephone pole, but, you know, they didn't. And so then a big party, cotton candy, peanuts, popcorn, hundreds of people. Everybody, they brought a dump truck in, full of rocks, dumped it. Everybody goes over, picks up 4 or 5 rocks, stands back, and they start throwing rocks at her, and, you know, get hit in the head, you know, with some pretty good-sized rocks, you know, a few times. You'll lose consciousness and then you'll die. Now that's violent. It's a violent way to die, and it's bloody. He said, "Oh God, it was bloody. It was. I mean, this is a big burly guy. Must weigh 230, 40 pounds. You know, I mean, big guy, big man, oil rig worker. You know." And he said it made a god awful impression on him. He said he'll have those emotional scars that he'll live with for the rest of his life. I said to him, he was here in class, as he was telling everybody in class, and I said, "Sir, when you go back to Saudi Arabia, are you going to have an affair with one of those Saudi women? Do you want to go over and commit adultery with one of them Saudi wives, or one of those Saudis? Do you want to have a sexual liaison over there? You want to practice a little sodomy or bestiality over there, kind of, you know, just having a good time on Friday night over in Saudi Arabia?" He said, "Oh God, no, I would never do it there." Hey, listen, maybe God isn't so far off Stop and think about that for a minute. Because in the Bible, from time to time, he uses the term that they may hear and fear. Oh, yeah, fear. Vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. You know, fear is a great motivator. I'll bet you if you took a kid, shot somebody on the street corner, took him down, tied him up to a telephone pole, stoned him to death in front of every kid in town. I mean, all the children of New York City go down to Times Square, watch this execution. Y'all better than that, participate in it. This is what we do to people that shoot other people off street corners. You think that might stop that? Well, let's try it this way. If you did that, every time you caught one of these kids doing that, instead of putting him in juvenile hall and letting him kick and scream in his jail cell, if you took him out and stoned him to death, one or two things would happen. Number one, we kill all of the people who are causing the problem. Therefore, there aren't any people left who shoot people off of street corners. Therefore, nobody gets shot off of street corners anymore. Sounds simple enough to you? Or those that would shoot people off of street corners now see what happens when you get caught doing that and they stop. Serves the same end. Our objective here is to get people to stop shooting other people off of street corners. Does it work? God says it does. The creator of the universe thinks it's a hell of a plan. In fact, he's the one that came up with that plan. That wasn't George Gordon. I mean, if you thought that I thought funk that up and I'm here reporting my views to you, you've got another guest coming, partner. I'm not that smart. I didn't know how to control juvenile delinquency either until I got here to Proverbs. Boy, this is a program. I'm telling you, this program here, he says it works. Now, of course, social lady and your government says, oh, no, Dr. Spock, the psychologists and sociologists and the teachers in the public school, no, that'll never work. Don't do that. You know, there's a story out here. I got to tell you this. The airline pilots here in the United States, the cockpit crews, they call them, we've had a problem with hijackings of airplanes over here. You heard about 9/11 and these Arab terrorists, were reported to have hijacked these airplanes. And so the airline pilots, they came up with an idea. And here's what it was. They said, well, what we do is we give all the airline pilots, the cockpit crews, that is the pilot, the co-pilot, and the flight engineer, three guys up there in the cockpit. We give those guys a 45. Now that, for all of you flatlanders, is a gun. It's one of those wicked evil things called a gun, loaded with real bullets, and they're going to put real bullets in them. And they said, then when somebody tries to hijack an airplane, they come up here to the cockpit, and they come in here with a box cutter. The captain turns around and says, sir, you can't come in here. And the guy raises his box cutter. The pilot reaches under his left armpit, pulls out his 45. He goes bang, 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 three shots in this hijacker's chest. And the airline pilot said, we think that we can stop hijackings by shooting and killing these people as they come through the cockpit door. It was a wild, violent idea, I gotta tell you. And so I don't know how this came about, but the Secretary of Transportation, he said, oh God, no, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin. We can never do that. That's bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil. And so they shot that idea right down. That's here in the United States. I thought it was a pretty good idea. Just as a layperson, I didn't have any objection to the pilot of the airplane having a gun. Oftentimes, captains on ships have guns. And so that was shot down. Now, is there anybody in the world that does that? Well, yeah, there's an airline in the world. They arm all of their pilots. I don't know if you knew that or not. It's called LL. LL. It's the Jewish airline. And so when you're flying on LL, just for all you people out there, I want to warn you, never buy a ticket on the Jewish airline LL, because all of those cockpit crews are armed and dangerous. And they said, well, these pilots are not trained to carry guns and handle guns. And I thought, well, wait a minute. Wait a second. You mean to tell me that this guy can be flying a 747? I mean, this guy is up in a cockpit that has hundreds of dials and instruments and all kinds of complex thingies over here. And here's this airplane weighs 500,000 pounds. And this guy, he can be trained to fly this 500,000-pound airplane with hundreds of instruments in here. He can take off from Los Angeles and fly this thing to Tokyo, Japan, across the water, in the dark, through the clouds, without ever seeing the ground, land it at the other end. He can do all of that, but he can't learn how to use a 45. I mean, you couldn't teach this guy? Surely these airline pilots have an IQ high enough that they could go out on a firing range someplace. I mean, I don't think that sheriff's deputies and policemen over here can fly a 747 at high noon on VFR flight rules. They all know how to use a 45. So my common sense says, well, if you can teach a dumb cop to use a 45, could you teach a smart pilot? Listen, as an educator, I have contact with adults. I don't teach children. Children are not welcome in this school. So if you've got a kid, don't send him to this school, because I won't teach him Jack Daly squat. I won't even let him in the door. Now, adults come in here. Every once in a while, an airline pilot comes in. And over the years, I've probably had, 30, 50, 100 maybe, 30 anyway, 30 airline pilots. At least 30. Hell, I think I could sit here and name 30. And here's been my experience with dealing with airline pilots. Almost exclusively, these airline pilots are former Air Force or Navy fighter pilots. Air Force or Navy fighter pilots. As a matter of fact, just going through my brain right now, I can't think of another exception. Now, there are some women that fly airplanes, and they've never been in the Air Force, never been in the Navy, and they learn to fly airplanes, and I'm sure they do an adequate job. But almost exclusively, when a pilot comes in here, you know, he says, well, I fly for Northwest Orient Airlines, and I fly 727s or 737s, or I fly 7. You know, this guy has been a Navy carrier pilot, trained killer. And then I ask him, I say, well, when you're flying that airplane off the carrier and you're going out on a mission, do you carry a sidearm? And every single one of them said yes, without exception. Every single Navy carrier pilot that ever took an airplane off of the carrier deck, flew it over hostile territory and dropped his bombs, is carrying a military 1911 45 caliber pistol under his left armpit. Did you know that? And I said, well, did anybody teach you how to use that? That's a pretty damn dangerous thing for you to be carrying around, you know, a gun like that, a handgun. Don't you know that those are dangerous? And, you know, every single one of them said, you know, when we went through basic training, we all learned how to use a 45. And I thought to myself, now here's a guy that can fly an airplane, one of these complex fighter jets off of an aircraft carrier and land it in the dark through the clouds. Can't even see the ground. And those guys have to be pretty smart to learn how to do that. And he told me, that is, all of them told me, every single pilot that comes through, I always ask them this question. I said, do you carry a gun under your armpit? Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, boys and girls, I don't think you have to spend very much money training these airline pilots here in the United States, because almost all of them are ex-military people who have already been trained in how to use a 45. I think they're just as smart as the policeman or the sheriff's deputy. Anyway, on LL Airline, that is the Jewish airline, they've never had a hijacking. How in the hell can you hijack an airplane when you open the door and the pilot's got a 45 trained on your heart? Huh? How do you do that? With a box cutter. Now, here in the United States, we said no, no, 1,000 times no, we will not arm the cockpit crew. We will spend $37 billion on Homeland Security. We will reinforce the cockpit doors. We will make all of the passengers bend over so we can look up their anuses. We'll make them take off their shoes, but we won't arm the captain. That's too damn dangerous. Okay, now that's the way Americans think. And that's the way our government behaves. Now, based upon what I just told you, can you people around the world understand now why we have 2-year-olds and 4-year-olds and 15-year-olds that are totally out of control? We Americans over here, we have lost touch with all common sense and reality. Boys and girls around the world, Americans do not have brains with which to function, to think with. That's what our problem is over here. So I just thought I'd spread that around and tell you. Now, here in the Bible, there is a God, and he says, hey, listen, you know, these kids over here, they can be controlled. You can teach and train children to mind, honest to God. I'll tell you another story over here. I used to have children, and a boy named Ted, and a girl named Kathleen, and another girl named Elaine. Those are my three oldest. And my wife and I, we just had two. At the time this happened, just had two. And my wife and I, we were pretty good at child discipline. We didn't have any terrible twos. Well, we didn't allow it. And so we like to eat in restaurants. And in fact, we like to eat in real nice restaurants. You know, restaurants where you have to wear a suit and tie. You know, a coat and tie in order to get in the door. You know, restaurants that serve things like Baked Alaska and Crepe Suzette's for dessert. You know, flashy, splashy places. And so there was one of these up in Vallejo, California. And so we went in, and we had our two little children. And I think they were about 4 years old and maybe 2 years old, 2 and 4 maybe. And the maitre d' just cringed and suggested that perhaps we should go to another restaurant where we would be happier, you know, like McDonald's or Burger King or something like that. And so I said to the maitre d', I said, sir, it is true that I have two little children here. And I said, these two little children have been eating in finer restaurants for many, many years now. I mean, my kid's only 4 and my daughter's 2. I said, many, many years now. And they have never acted up, and I can assure you these will not. Now, if they do, we will get up and walk out of this restaurant. We will leave just as soon as you're dissatisfied with our conduct or behavior. Now, my two little children are standing there holding mommy and daddy's hands. And they're not saying a word. They're not whining. They're not crying. They're not jumping up and down. They're not throwing themselves on the ground or anything. They're just standing there looking at this nice man. I'm like, who's this? It's the maitre d', sweetheart. And so he acquiesced, and he set us down. Oh, you should have seen the patrons in the restaurant. I mean, these guys are all doctors and dentists and professionals, and they're there with their wives and girlfriends and their mistresses and so on. And the looks, it was like, oh, no. I mean, these restaurants, you know, when you go to these classy restaurants, you know. Now, my wife and I, we're just young. Yeah, we're in our 20s. And we're going to eat at this classy restaurant. I mean, you know, we're going to spend $35 on you know, today, $35. You know, you say, well, that'll pay for one meal. No, no. Back in those days, hell, a filet mignon, you know, was $5.50. Kansas City strip steak dinner, you know, was $3.50. We're going to be spending around $35 for dinner here. Yeah, that was a lot of money, you know, 1964, 5, 6, 7, 8, no, 70, 72, something. And so the maitre d' takes us over 6. He put us way over in the corner, as far away from people as he could get us. And the people around us, they were just shocked. Oh, my God, no, no. I spend money to come here. And they were looking. And so we sat there and we ate. Our children never said a word. They ate. Everything is just quiet. We're sitting over in the corner doing our thing. I looked over at my wife and I said, do you want to test dessert? And she said, let's do it. The maitre d' came over and I said, we will have crepe Suzette's for dessert. Now, we've been here for 2 hours. You know, in these restaurants, dinner takes a long time. You know, you get 4 or 5 courses. It comes slowly but surely, you know, and they got wine, and you know, the wine steward comes over and he shows you wine. He's got a rag on his arm. And so here we get all through with dinner, and I don't know, maybe not 2 hours, but an hour and a half, something like that. Do you want to try dessert? And we did. Now, dessert, crepe Suzette's, you know, it takes time. You know, you have to come over and they make the dessert right there, and it's a flaming dessert. We had it. The people in the restaurant are watching all of this, and here's these two little kids sitting over here, never said a word. Now, peep out of them in 2 hours. We sit there, we eat dinner, we eat dessert. And when we finished dessert, it was about time to leave. Now, people are coming in and they're going out, you know. And pretty soon, there's a round of applause. Somebody started applauding. When we got up to leave, they started applauding. And everybody in the restaurant applauded. My wife and I, as we walked out with our two little children, who sat there through the entire dinner and never caused a scene, never cried, never had to be taken out. I tell you, boys and girls, children are smarter than dogs. You can train a child to behave, to mind. Honest to God, you can do it. Takes a little doing, but it can be done. All right, we're out of time. I've got to give you a reminder here that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log, our schedule, and archives. And all of that can be accessed through our website webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, we're out of time. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. Good night, friends.